friends of their families. There are those among us, so many heroes, who are working to combat this dreaded disease, and others who are doing the caregiving for the victims of Alzheimer's. Here with us today to discuss the disease, its symptoms, caregiving, and the treatment of Alzheimer's is Diane Bond, the Education and Training Services Manager for the Alzheimer's Association of Southeastern Wisconsin. I am so honored to have you with us today, Diane, and I thank you so much for joining us for this really important discussion.
Oh, thank you so much for having me, Linda. I greatly appreciate it.
People used to believe that people just get older and they get forgetful, and that's just part of the process. And yet Alzheimer's is now really classified as a disease. I wonder if you could tell our listeners why it's classified as a disease and what the issues are.
Sure. To go back, you had mentioned that when you get older, you get forgetful, and that is a part of normal aging. And being forgetful, you're leaving your keys, not being able to find them, forgetting a name, not recognizing a face, not being able to remember directions that were just given to you. All of that is a part of normal aging and actually starts in your mid-20s.
Okay.
As you get older, you start noticing it more, and it really starts bothering you.
Mm-hmm.
And you go, oh, my gosh, there must be something wrong. I'm forgetting my keys. The key thing to remember is that if you can remember you're forgetting things, you're okay. That indicates that you are dealing with normal aging forgetfulness. So if you know you're forgetting your keys, if you know you're forgetting names, all of those things, because you can remember that you're forgetting, that indicates that you're dealing with normal aging. And despite the fact that it is annoying, it is something that is going to continue as you get older. So don't be too hard on yourself when you notice you're forgetting things more and more, because that's just the way our brain reacts to getting older.
Mm-hmm.
Now, forgetfulness is a part of Alzheimer's disease. It's one of many symptoms of the disease, which include perception changes, cognitive changes, changes in language, etc. It's much more than just forgetfulness. And Alzheimer's has been around since 1906, when it was discovered by Dr. Alois Alzheimer, who found that there were abnormalities in the brain, and he started noticing it in more folks who were dealing with those symptoms, and his colleagues said, well, then we're naming it after you. And that's why we have Alzheimer's disease.
Do we know, Diane, what causes Alzheimer's disease? I read about Alzheimer in 1906 and what they were looking at, but is it plaque buildup, or do we just not know?
Well, there are several theories out there as to what causes the disease. The theory that the Alzheimer's Association follows is called the beta amyloid theory, and the beta amyloid theory indicates that proteins that are activated when someone gets the disease attack brain cells and kill them.
Okay.
So we have 100 billion nerve cells. These proteins become active when someone gets the disease, and then these particular proteins start attacking the nerve cells, so they can attack the nerve cells responsible for blinking your eyes, swallowing, speech, continence, walking. They also can attack the nerve cells responsible for lungs breathing and heart beating.
And so is there genetics for that? In other words, is all Alzheimer's pretty much genetic? If you have it in your family, you may very well get it.
If you have Alzheimer's in your family, so if your mother or father has it, or a sibling has it, you have a 2 to 3% chance of developing the disease.
Mm.
Not 50, not 80, not 90.
Oh, that's encouraging.
2 to 3% chance.
Mm-hmm.
And that is above what the normal general population risk is. You can develop Alzheimer's with having no familial connection.
Okay.
So we're not quite sure why, but there is indeed genetic predisposition.
Okay.
So although you may have those particular genes in your system that indicate you could develop the disease, it is not a guarantee that
okay.
you will.
Are there tests to determine if you have Alzheimer's? Is it something you can see on any scan of the brain?
No.
Or no?
It is not. You cannot see Alzheimer's on PET scans, CT scans, or MRIs. Right now, the only way that you can actually tell if someone has Alzheimer's is if you look at a slide of their brain cells after autopsy to determine if they have certain hallmarks that indicate that they are indeed dealing with Alzheimer's.
So right now you determine how if someone has Alzheimer's by more cognitive kind of tests?
What's taken into consideration for diagnosis right now is that the doctors are looking at family background. They are looking at current lifestyle. They are looking at past history. They're looking at medications that you're taking. And pretty much they do a process of elimination. So they say, well, these symptoms can be caused, and the symptoms, by the way, of dementia, which is caused, which Alzheimer's causes, the symptoms of dementia are confusion, disorientation, memory loss, and behavior changes. Okay. Those symptoms are caused by 70, that's 70, other causes other than Alzheimer's. So Alzheimer's is just one of the many things that can cause those particular symptoms.
I know. I was reading about some of the symptoms, and I thought, you know, to me a lot of them sounded like depression, which older people often get depression too.
A depression can cause those symptoms. A lack of sleep causes those symptoms. High stress, grief, medication interactions, poor nutrition, all of those things can cause the symptoms of dementia.
And
Alzheimer's is one of them.
Okay. In the movie, this was early onset Alzheimer's, and my understanding is that's not so common, and there is a test maybe for that. Is that correct?
There are two types of Alzheimer's disease. There is younger onset Alzheimer's, like the woman had in the movie, and the onset for younger onset is between the ages of 30 and 65.
Okay.
This type of Alzheimer's is more rare than the older onset or sporadic Alzheimer's. That type of Alzheimer's has its onset at age 65 and is the one that we more commonly associate with Alzheimer's disease.
And do people live successfully with Alzheimer's? In other words, I assume there's a spectrum of how bad the Alzheimer's is. And don't a lot of people after 65 maybe have some cognitive impairment that is might be Alzheimer's, but it's functional, or no?
Yes, the people who deal with Alzheimer's, whether it is younger onset or older onset, are very functional until the parts of the brain are affected that deal with cognitive reasoning and functioning, et cetera. And this can happen at any time in the disease. So there are people who are diagnosed and immediately have cognitive issues.
Okay.
There are other folks who are diagnosed and don't have cognitive issues until further on in the disease. Because the disease attacks nerve cells, it has 100 billion choices. Everybody's Alzheimer's is different. So you're going to talk to one person who has the ability to still read. They're able to have great discussions with you. They are able to reason. And then that same person, though, cannot walk, has problems with their bowels, and also may have problems with hearing or vision. And another person has the exact opposite, where that person does not have the ability to continue to speak well. They have reasoning and cognitive issues, but they are fine physically. So it really depends what is affected, and that's why it is so important for everyone to remember that each person is unique, and the Alzheimer's disease that they see is really Alzheimer's in that person. You can't make blanket statements and say everybody with Alzheimer's will, everybody with Alzheimer's does, everybody with Alzheimer's should. It just doesn't work.
Yeah. And, you know, what kind of things, I've heard people say this, like, I wouldn't really want to know if I had it. And yet the literature all says, you know, get early diagnosis, you know, get in if you have concerns, because there are things we can do.
Absolutely.
Are there things people can do?
When you know about the disease, the biggest thing, first of all, once there is a diagnosis or a suspicion of a diagnosis, is to learn as much as you can. Because when you know what is happening, what and how to deal with what's happening and what is coming, you're much better prepared than saying, if I close my eyes and really wish, it'll go away. Because Alzheimer's does not get better. It is a progressive brain disease, and people die from it. It is a sixth leading cause of death in the United States.
I read that. I was just amazed.
Do
increase in, like they say, play chess and do Sudoku and do crosswords and have social interaction, do those things actually impact for the good on the disease?
There is nothing that has been scientifically proven to slow down, stop, or prevent Alzheimer's disease. Okay. There is nothing out there currently that will actually do one of those three things, that to stop it, to slow it down, or prevent it. The medications that are currently available, and you may have heard of them on TV, the Exelon patch or Aricept have been on television. There are two other medications called Razadine and Namenda. They treat the symptoms. They treat the cognitive issues, the memory loss, those types of things, but they do not treat the causes of the disease.
Okay.
So what good then is do things like Sudoku, et cetera, do is they help maintain brain health. So the goal is to keep your brain as healthy as possible, and there are four things that you can do to keep your brain healthy. Number one is exercise. 30 minutes a day of cardio activity, which means that you get your heart rate up. It doesn't have to be done all at once. It can be done over 10-minute segments, whatever works for you. But getting the blood flowing to the brain is extremely important. Number two is social interaction, being around other people. So book clubs, exercise, going to church, going to synagogue, going to areas where you are interacting with other people, taking a continuing education class, all of those help your brain build new neural pathways, which strengthens your brain. It's like building muscle.
Mm-hmm.
The next one is mental activity, and that's where your Sudoku comes in, your crossword puzzles, reading, learning new things. All of those, again, are important for brain strength. But you can't be doing crossword puzzles that you do in 5 minutes. Those don't count. They don't challenge your brain at all.
Okay.
You can come to me and say, Diane, I did 22 crossword puzzles today. I really must have a strong brain. That is not going to build your brain and make it work. You've got to sort of be sweating when you're looking at those words and saying, now, what is that? And have to come back to it over and over again. That's what your brain likes. Do things that challenge your brain, such as using your non-dominant hand for half an hour every day.
Oh, interesting.
Do something familiar with your eyes closed, like brushing your hair, like brushing your teeth. Don't do this with your driving, but have your eyes closed and do things, because this then gets the other parts of your brain working and exercising.
So you have
a different way to work.
Exercising and social interaction and mental activity, and what was the fourth one?
And the fourth one is food.
Food,
your diet.
Diet.
What you eat. The American Heart Association diet, which is low fat, low sodium, lots of green leafy vegetables, fruits, all of those things are very, very good for your brain. Anything that's good for your heart is good for your brain. The diet that is right now being touted as exceptionally good for brain health is the Mediterranean diet.
Mm-hmm.
And that is cooking with olive oil instead of animal fats, lots more fish than lean red meats, and, of course, an occasional glass of wine.
And, so, you know, what's interesting about this, too, is this is almost like the four things that we should do whether we have Alzheimer's or not, and just
exactly.
Kind of to live a healthy lifestyle.
Exactly. And so you're trying to, these all, and they are all perfect for keeping yourself healthy. But just everyone needs to be aware that just because you do these things is not a guarantee that you won't develop the disease.
Right.
If you think about Ronald Reagan, was he socially active
right.
as the president? He was. Did he have mental stimulation? You bet. He
mm-hmm.
was doing a lot. Did he have physical activity? He was running all over the White House and his ranch. And did he eat well? Absolutely, except for maybe the jelly beans.
jelly bellies.
He ate very, very well.
Uh-huh.
So he did. He was doing everything right, and he still developed Alzheimer's.
Diane, how hopeful are you? Is there, you know, I know research is ongoing and money is raised for the research. And, you know, is anything seeming to come forward? You know, how hopeful are you about the ability of research to find some method not only to address the symptoms as the medicine now does, but to address the disease itself?
Yeah, there is a lot going on research-wise regarding Alzheimer's, and it is ongoing, and it is very, very almost desperate at this point because the baby boomers are now moving into the danger age range of 65 and up of developing the disease. Right now, there are 10,000 people a day turning 65 in the United States. This means that the possibility of a large number of those people developing Alzheimer's increases every day that we're dealing with this. And research is the key to finding out how to slow this down and how do we get a handle on this. The problem that we're dealing with Alzheimer's right now is lack of funding for Alzheimer's disease. Alzheimer's disease does not receive a large amount of funding from the federal government as other diseases such as diabetes, cancer, HIV, AIDS. All of those well surpass Alzheimer's in terms of support to do ongoing research. So the numbers of money that is there to support the research that we need is low, and that's why organizations like the Alzheimer's Association are out doing fundraising like our walks and our Mardi Gras and other events, because we need to continue to push for more research, because research is the answer. We've mm-hmm. seen how successful research has been for cancer. Cancer 30 years ago was not anything you talked about. It was very hush-hush. Doctors would not tell patients of the diagnosis. They would not talk, families would not talk about it in public because they were embarrassed. Alzheimer's is there right now.
Yes.
If people don't talk about Alzheimer's, they hide it. It's not something that people discuss. But look at what's happened with cancer.
Right.
It's on the table. And because they have now found solutions and answers to getting the disease under control because of the high, high level of research.
And so, the irony with Alzheimer's, too, is whereas cancer it doesn't grow in quite the leaps and bounds, Alzheimer's will, because we're, you know, the beginning bump of that baby
exactly.
boom generation is coming through. So I saw that from in 2014, 100,000 patients or Alzheimer's victims in Wisconsin, and by 2025, 130, and it just keeps going up because that whole bump is going through.
And those are low numbers.
Okay.
Because Alzheimer's is not a reportable disease. In other words, it is not mm-hmm. contagious. So doctors are not required to tell the CDC when they make a diagnosis of the disease. So those numbers are estimates. At the Alzheimer's Association, we estimate a full half of that number more people are actually dealing with the disease but have been misdiagnosed or will not go to the doctor.
Wow.
So those numbers are much higher, and this is a big problem, and that's why we are encouraging people to talk to their legislators to be able to support legislation that will increase funding for Alzheimer's research, for caregiver support, for other legislative moves that have to do with families who have a loved one with the disease.
Yes.
And making sure that people get their voices heard, and also to support the Alzheimer's Association with monetary support as well as volunteer time to come and assist us and help us to provide our programs, to help us with our events. We need assistance and support to be able to get a handle on this disease because it's not slowing down.
No, it's not slowing. In fact, it will increase more than other diseases until because of, you know, the large number of people who are going past the 65 age, as you noted. You know, something I wanted to speak to, too, is that people may be listening to this who are caregivers, and I have certainly talked at my age to lots of people who are caregiving for someone with Alzheimer's, and sometimes it's the early stages and it's not bad, and then sometimes they don't know their own children. Respite care and care for caregivers must be an enormously important thing. Does the Alzheimer's Association also work with caregivers, have support groups or sessions?
Yes. Caregivers are a focus for us. These are the folks that we have classes for. So we have classes called Understanding Dementia and Savvy Caregiver, which are geared to those who are providing care for a loved one. And they provide people with a background on the disease. They give them tips and hints about how to deal with regular and ongoing issues. We give people a roadmap about how to move forward. What do you do? How do you keep things going? We have a 24/7 helpline, which allows people to call in at any time of the day.
And can I give that number?
And that number is 800-272-3900.
Or go to ALZ.org.
Correct. www.alz.org for more information about the other services that are available. But going back to the 24/7 helpline, for those who are caring for someone at home, their loved one may get up at 2 o'clock in the morning and say, I have to go to the library.
Mm-hmm.
And the caregiver says, no, it's 2 o'clock in the morning, you need to go to bed. But the person with the disease is saying, no, I've got to go. And now they're putting on their coat. This is where we invite families to call the 800 number because there's a live human being on the other end when they call. And there's somebody there who can talk them through that situation and give them some ideas of ways to handle this, to calm the person down, to be able to get back to sleep and get back to their evening and their night. And we do this, we answer the phone throughout the day, and there's always somebody there.
Right.
So no matter if you have an issue that you need assistance with or you just need to talk, because caregiving is a challenge, it is the greatest gift of love that people can give to anyone, but it also is very, very challenging. And when you're doing it, you don't have to go through it alone. That's why we're here. All of our services for families, from the classes we offer to phone conferences that we do, one-on-one meetings, all of those are free of charge.
And Diane, you know, there are probably people listening doing caregiving. And one thing that I see the families struggling with is how do you know when you finally maybe have to put that person in a good facility, but a facility, and how do you let go and how do you make that decision?
So that's a really good question, and one that many of your listeners may be dealing with right now. First of all, if there is safety as an issue, so if the loved one is falling more frequently, is too heavy to lift, is behaving in ways that are endangering themselves and those around them, when safety becomes an issue for the person and for their family, then it's time to think about what are our next steps, what are we going to look at in terms of placement. And again, that's where we're here to help. We will talk you through what are the options in the community. Are you looking at something such as assisted living? Are you in need of long-term care where there is more intensive caregiving? What exactly does your loved one need? We work with you on that. We find and provide resources for you to check into. And then we talk you through the process because it's hard, because many times promises have been made of, I'm never going to put you anywhere, I'm going to keep you at home. but that becomes physically impossible, mm-hmm. and also mentally, because the strain is too much. And many times families, even when there are three or four family members helping out, it just doesn't work. And this is not something that's uncommon, and folks need to know that they should call. We will talk them through it. We will help find out what needs to be done next. But safety has to be at the top of the list, and not just thinking, well, you know, that was an off day. She fell because she was just having poor balance. When you see it the first time, it's time to take steps.
Uh-huh. And people need to be understanding and forgiving themselves too, because like you said, so many people try for so long to take care, and it's very hard to let go and say, I need a little help here.
Right, because if you as a caregiver get to the point where you injure yourself or you become ill because you are putting everything into caring for your loved one, if you get sick, then your loved one is going to be placed somewhere without any of your input.
Mm-hmm.
And you need to take care of yourself for you and for your loved one, which means that you have to move yourself to the top of the pile in terms of what do I need to take care of first.
Right. All of us, as we get older, I thought some of those things, too, that you said at the very beginning about understanding that there's a difference between forgetting things when you just are a busy person and you forget things, or losing your way with directions but still knowing where you are. There's a wonderful scene in Still Alice where she's jogging, doing the exercise thing, and stops and all of a sudden doesn't really know where she is, and she's in a very familiar place. And I think one of the things Alzheimer's Association can help with is, I've got a great little book in front of me, 10 Signs, and that you differentiate, as you did in the beginning, between what's normal forgetting and what's Alzheimer's signs.
Absolutely. Yeah. We have a lot of brochures. We have a lot of booklets. I invite people to visit the website and click on the publications link. Anything you're interested in reading further, please just give us a call. We'll pop it in the mail to you. Most of the publications are available online for you to take a look at. Several of the classes that we have are available online, but I do encourage people to come to a live presentation, because you get to hear what other people have to say. You can ask your own questions, and you really take away so much more when you're around other people.
Absolutely. And again, it's www.alz.org, and the 800 number is 800-272-3900. And
correct.
I can't believe we're coming to an end so quickly.
Oh, my gosh, that was fast.
It was very fast. You provided so much helpful information. In the book Still Alice, which Diane read and I read several years ago, there are many amazing passages, but I wanted to read this one and end with this one. The main character, who has the early onset Alzheimer's, is giving a speech. And she says, my yesterdays are disappearing and my tomorrows are uncertain, so what do I live for? I live for each day. I live in the moment. Some tomorrow soon I'll forget that I stood before you and gave this speech. But just because I'll forget it some tomorrow doesn't mean that I didn't live every second of it today. I will forget today, but that doesn't mean that today didn't matter. I'd like to thank our guest today, Diane Bawn, the Education and Training Services Manager for the Alzheimer's Association of Southeastern Wisconsin, for your important work in addressing this disease. We appreciate so much your being with us today, Diane.
Thank you so much for this opportunity to share information. Mm-hmm. I appreciate the invitation.
Thanks. And thanks to everyone out there who is facing Alzheimer's themselves, who are caregivers for those with Alzheimer's, and or who are doing the important research that may someday cure this horrible disease. You truly are heroes in our midst. And finally, thanks to you, our listeners, for sharing with us your time this Saturday. I'm Linda Fleshensky, and we hope that you will go online at WGTD.org to hear this and other of our Heroes programs, and that you will tune in to WGTD HD on the 4th and 5th Saturdays of the month at 10 a.m. for more editions of Heroes in Our Midst. We salute the hero in all of you. Take care.
This is WGTD. You're listening to Education Matters, the only weekly broadcast in southeastern Wisconsin devoted exclusively to a discussion of local educational issues. Education Matters is co-hosted by John.